defense attorneys and the DAs draw their instructions on the definition from the cases that are relevant to the facts of the action being tried. I think I'm not personally tremendously in favor of putting everything into the statutes, because the statutes are going to last a lot longer, hopefully, than the cases. And I think we should have be like the United States Constitution, have a sufficient amount of flexibility that it will endure. And I'm not sure that by the verbiage that we have in preliminary draft 3 here, that this would endure very long before somebody would come in and start trying to change it.
Bruce, you're in favor of striking the definition, then, is that?
Yeah,
and you are too. Uh-huh. I move that we strike the definition
and
adopt 15.25
as amended.
As amended.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Carried. How about section 5?
Now, this is a section that I really have mixed feelings about. Our last draft didn't even include this section, but all of the new codes speak to this question, and here again we're talking about ignorance of the law is no excuse, and the old saw that everybody's presumed to know the law, which is kind of a joke when it comes right down to it, because nobody knows all of the law. And this question of ignorance or mistake has been written and discussed for a good number of years now. I think all of the case books in the law schools talk about this. Professor Hall is very critical of this in his treatises on the criminal law and on culpability.
But he's very critical of inserting this.
No, he's very critical of not having this kind of a provision, and that there are instances justifiably when ignorance of the law is and should be an excuse. If you're talking about culpability, and if you're talking about it. Negativing the culpable mental state of the individual. Now, California has a long discussion on this, which I've put into your books under a separate tab here. It's under your fourth or fifth red tab in your book, California tentative draft number 2, on ignorance or mistake.
Now, if you have ignorance or mistake as a defense, and you get to a defrauding an innkeeper situation, and I rent a house for 30 days, I'm required to give 30 days notice before I vacate. The 30th day, I pay my rent and leave. Then give the 30 days notice, get charged with defrauding an innkeeper.
Well, I don't think you'd be guilty of defrauding an innkeeper, would you? You wouldn't have received any occupancy. You have paid for what you received under your hypothetical action. But I'm not necessarily promoting this section, but I did think this subcommittee should be aware of the discussions that have taken place on this and what the California drafters think about it. And, on page 7, I discuss where these come from. New York Model Penal Code and Michigan and California all have sections on this question.
Illinois here, too, does.
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
doesn't this fly in the face of what we were just talking about? The axiom of...
It does, yeah, it does to it. The axiom that everybody, that ignorance of the law is no excuse, yeah.
All right, sure.
Excuse me.
Pardon me.
No reported Oregon case in which ignorance was raised.
And we conducted a rather thorough search, and I'm telling you that we just we did find a couple of cases that kind of talk around it, but and those were found after this was written. Just as an afterthought, we looked under another body of law and finally came up with a couple of cases, but they're under strict liability offenses, really.
A person who acts upon an honest and good faith reliance.
Where are you reading?
I'm reading from page 7 in the commentary. Well, Don, I think the last two sentences in your commentary encapsulize my feeling. You say, an attempt to establish statutory guidelines for this type of case might well create more problems than it solves by opening the door to spurious defenses based on technicality. Such a situation seems best left to the sound judgment of prosecutors and courts of the state. The availability of a bona fide defense based on ignorance under the present state of the law, because you can make out if you truly have a bona fide case of ignorance or mistake, it goes to the mens rea, doesn't it?
Well, even without this section, now, under...
So even without the section, we have circumstances where this could be...
Well, there will be instances, say, under justification, where, say, you have a defense of self-defense, for example, where you were under a mistaken... impression that you were about to be assaulted or something.
Yeah, you thought the gun that was being pointed at you was loaded.
Yeah.
You better shoot first.
Right, and you're, as a matter of fact, you're mistaken, but it would still justify the actions you took, even though you were mistaken, and that would be covered under justification and not under this, because sub 3 of section 5 did refer to that. The state of mind created supports a defense of justification. That would be... Of course, sub 3 would exist without section 5 because we will have a section on justification in the code.
All right.
But at the same time, this seemed important enough to the model penal code and to all these other states to expressly include it in their codes that I felt that we certainly ought to see what the discussion was. I think that this mistake of law that with respect to the erroneous advice from an official and you acted upon that. California has not yet decided what to do with that proposition, and their discussion in this extract that I put in your books points that out, that there's quite a bit of disagreement among the California Commission. They're really afraid of it in a sense. They think that it will open up the door to spurious defenses and whatnot. So I didn't include that type of section in here in this draft, but whether or not you think anything at all is required on this, I don't know.
I don't think it is.
No, I recall one time of having a client that I had gotten a divorce for, and she remarried within the 6 month period. And her former husband went to the district attorney and insisted that he file a complaint, or be permitted to file a complaint against her, charging her, I don't know, this lewd and lascivious cohabitation or adulterous cohabitation, or just what it was. And I don't know whether the prosecuting attorney knew I was involved in it or how, but at least we came to the conclusion at that time that there was, under these circumstances, even though she had remarried, gone through a marriage ceremony, and was living with an ostensible husband, she was guilty of this offense, and there was ignorance or so on, was no defense to it at all, and that she would have been guilty. Now, I don't know whether this was by virtue of court decision or whether the statute made it such, but at least this was at that time our conclusion, both the district attorney and myself, and he didn't want to prosecute.
Well, there was a provision in that old statute that says if the either party gets married within that 6 months, they're liable as if the divorce had not occurred.
I think this may have been the
the
reason for it.
Would have had a problem of proof. Well, I used to get complaints of a somewhat similar nature nearly every week, but there's always a question of getting a witness. I mean, because there's a certain amount of proof required in order to sustain the burden of proof. And, I don't think this. I think this would promote more problems than it would solve, and I'd be amenable to a motion to delete it. I think it's probably right to bring it up, in as much as the other codes have it. As Don indicated, justification is going to be taken care of in the justification section, and sub 1 goes to the culpable mental state, and I think that can be approached in other areas. So if the subcommittee agrees, we'd entertain a motion to delete it.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, then somebody want to move to adopt preliminary draft number 3 as amended?
So moved.
Okay. Heard the motion. Everybody in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, and if it's possible to amend it by interlineation to save your work, fine. We'll leave that to your judgment. Where do we go from here, Don?
All right, amendments then to preliminary draft number 2 on forgery. And that's why I have the minutes of the commission meeting of February 22nd. That's the meeting at which we went through the entire forgery article.
Perhaps we take a 5-minute recess before we start.
Yeah.
Give everybody a chance to stretch. I don't think it will take too long, will it?
Well, not really, because the main thing we have to discuss is the section on bad checks. That's the gist of it, pretty much. The rest of it is just to show you that we've prepared amendments similar to amending a bill point out the changes in this without going through and redoing the whole draft.
That's fine.
Now these were the amendments proposed at the February 22nd meeting, and there's been some restructuring of the draft because some of the sections that appeared in here were deleted in total by the commission, so those have just been taken out, as you can see as we go through. And I think probably the best thing to do is just go through and
What do we have to do? Take these out of the...
If you'll get out your preliminary draft number 2 in your book, and then you can refer to those as we go through the amendments here.
Tell me this. What's the difference between the colors of the tabs?
Well, these are tentative drafts in pink. These were subjects and drafts that were discussed in another subcommittee before they came here. The blue ones are things that this subcommittee has worked on, and then the minutes are in the back here.
Take preliminary draft number 2 of forgery out. And
yeah, that's
basic.
Got
a blue tab on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
you say take it out?
Well, however you want to do it, it might be easier to work with because you'll probably even want to take out.
It's all the same as this,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, you have your.
Oh, you brought the one we sent you.
With no, it was
no,
here.
I just handed him. He's got one.
Oh, okay.
But do they have the amendments in the book?
Yeah, the amendments are in the book. Yeah.
I think this one's got my marks in it, the one you handed. You see, it looks like my writing.
Your book has a separate tab for the amendments.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we went through forgery in detail in this February 22 meeting, didn't we not?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
It'll help us, I guess, in connection with the recommended amendments, if you refer us to the pages in the minutes where these things were discussed. And you're going to have to kind of carry the ball. I'm out of touch.
No, I don't seem to have my minutes for the. You had some extra
minutes of what?
Commission minutes. Here's a copy.
Okay.
Hang on a minute. Is that the right
thing? Yeah, this is right.
Oh, wait a minute. I know where it is. I put it in the folder. Okay, page 13.
Minutes?
Yeah, page 13 of your minutes.
Doug, the amendments for forgery, which are under a separate, well, you have there, they put an amendment like we amend the bill, and so you're going to have to take preliminary draft number 2 of the forgery, and we'll use that as a bill from which we make these amendments, and the genesis for this is the minutes of the full commission meeting. Don is saying that discussion is on page 13 in those minutes. Okay.
Now, section 3 is what we're concerned with. Is the first change. Now, in your first draft, in preliminary draft number 2, section 3 had a sub 5 there with respect to a written instrument officially issued or created by a public office, public servant, or government agency. The commission voted to delete.
Say that. Whereabouts is that?
This is on page 8 of preliminary draft number 2, section 3. And at the top of your page 13 of your minutes of the commission meeting, you'll see Judge Burns moved to delete subsection 5 of section 3 and to have the commentary appropriately show that it is not the intention of the commission to say that it does not constitute a crime, but rather that those acts would come under section 2, forgery in the second degree. The motion carried unanimously. So that's the first change that was voted by the commission, was to delete subsection 5 of section 3 of preliminary draft number 2, which I have done.
And the reason for that was?
Well, they felt that
it's covered.
That it would be covered as forgery in the second degree. See, of course, forgery in the second degree is just the basic statement of forgery with respect to falsely making, completing, or altering a written instrument or uttering a written instrument. they felt this was just covered as a written instrument, and that it should not be a greater offense because it involved an instrument from a public servant or a public agency. It was a policy question of not making it first degree.
I thought perhaps there was some discussion relating the fact that 5 would come under 4. It could be first degree. I thought the commission felt that a written instrument officially issued or created by a public office, public servant, or government agency might come within the definition of public record.
Well, it's something that might or might not be a public record.
But if it is not a public record, then it shouldn't rise to the dignity of first degree, but rather should be second.
I take that as Judge Burns' thought, yeah.
Well, I would concur with that.
We remember we discussed the Brantley case,
mm-hmm.
which was that certificate of nomination, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll move the amendment. All in favor?
Second.
Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Now, on page 10, you need to section 4. This was a person commits the crime of criminal possession of a forged instrument in the second degree if knowing it to be forged and with intent to utter saying he possesses a forged instrument. This is where we got into the forged prescriptions, right?
The rest of these amendments are discussed in one place here in your minutes, and I'll get those to you in a minute here. So. Page 29, there's a discussion of all the sections. 4, 5, and 6, it says were previously voted on, and that's what I've got located here, so I direct your attention to the specific.
Page 18 is section 4. Professor Platt said that section 4 raised a very interesting point with respect to inchoate crimes that he felt the commission should look at.
Yeah.
Possession is incomplete criminal conduct, he said. I guess everybody's reading that. It's an inchoate crime. Professor Platt was objecting to what we'd previously done with regard to making possession of burglar tools crime because he said that the general section on inchoate crimes would cover. Is this right?
Yeah, and that's, and 4, 5, and 6 are all possession type crimes, forged instruments or forgery devices, and the commission voted to delete those. And the understanding that they felt that this would be an incomplete criminal conduct that would amount to an attempt under the inchoate crimes, and that's what Professor Platt felt too.
Let me ask you this. Procedurally, Don, did the full commission vote, take this action, and then ask that it go back to us for review? Or did they take the action and then with finality?
Well, with my understanding, with respect to these deletions, that was the action of the commission, and that these weren't sent back for further consideration by the subcommittee.
Well, then, if that's the case, then it's purposeless for us to act on.
Well,
yeah, it's moot.
But
it's
the thing is, I had to set it out this way so you can see what the draft's going to look like when we discuss these other sections.
But then no action is required.
Right, so you'll know why these sections have been renumbered.
All right. Well, so 4, 5, and 6, doesn't merit any discussion.
Actually, the two areas that were really sent back, the main one was Section 8, which appears now as Section 8, negotiating a bad check. It was Section 11 in the first draft. And then they wanted us to discuss the question about forged prescriptions.
How about Dr. Graham being appointed to a subcommittee of one? Research this, check with John Misko, and come back.
I read it.
And I'll apologize for some of the bad reproduction on these minutes. We had a new mimeograph that wasn't working properly. We've got it corrected now, but we were having a little problem there with our copies for a while. It's not as clear on some pages. I would like to mention that I wrote to the Oregon State Medical Association, and I also wrote to the Pharmaceutical Association to inquire whether or not they had any point of view on the question of forged prescriptions, and I have not heard from them. I wrote that letter, it's been about a month ago now. I haven't had any reaction from them. I asked for either an expression from an officer or I wrote to the executive secretary.
Perhaps we should just go ahead and make a decision and there'll be plenty of time for them to come in if they want to when we publish our tentative draft. But with regard to 5, which is used to be Section 8 on page 20, it formerly read, a person commits the crime of fraudulently obtaining signature if it is intended to fraud or injure another to acquire substantial benefit for himself or another. He obtains the signature of the person to a written instrument by means of any misrepresentation of fact which he knows to be false.
Yeah, now that's a grammatical change that was voted by the commission.
Incidentally, I like the manner in which you're setting the minutes up by undermining the section so that it helps the public. It helps us locate these things. It's changing the person's Well, that was Representative Lentz's suggestion, was it not? Well, did they send it back to us?
No, in setting up these amendments, I had to set up all the amendments that were voted on, so any place where there was a change in the text, I set it out here so you could see what it looked like. But here again, this section doesn't require any further action by the subcommittee.
All right, so it's just the section on prescriptions, is that right? That needs.
Is that it?
And which number is it?
What about negotiating a bad check, Don? Does that need? Is that a draft, or is that something that?
Well, these are recommendations of the commission, but in this particular instance, they sent it back for further consideration also.
So then, Section 11 on page 30 of preliminary draft number 2. Has to be considered by us now, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. you know, it might not even hurt, Connie, as a matter of form in the minutes, to put on at the top of the page, left-hand side, the section that's considered on that page.
Now, on page 36 of your minutes, it said that the proposed draft, which I've set out here on the amendments, it was agreed that the proposed draft would go back to the subcommittee for redrafting, incorporating the commission's policy decisions. And those policy decisions were, one, that the language be limited more than it was in the first draft, to make it clear that we're talking primarily about checks and site drafts. And also, there was a discussion about this waiting time. On page 35, it says, the new language proposed for section 11, subsection 1, now read, quote, a person commits the crime of negotiating a bad check if he negotiates, comma, utters, or delivers a check or similar site order for the payment of money knowing that it will not be honored by the drawee. And that is what we have under sub 1 of section 8 on page 2 of your amendments. And then it says, Senator Burns moved that the remaining language in the model penal code draft on page 35 be adopted, the second sentence of the subsections. It was agreed that there would necessarily be some drafting change in the language to adapt it for the proposed draft. So, this language has been modified somewhat, but incorporates the same kind of language that the model penal code uses.
Well, sub 1 is the same.
Yeah, sub 1 is exactly the same. But we frame it in terms of prima facie evidence of knowledge that the check or order would not be honored.
Now, who inserted this, unless the check or order is post-dated in sub 2? Sub 2 now reads, for purposes of this section as well as any as in any prosecution for theft committed by means of a bad check, comma, unless the check or order is posted, it is prima facie evidence of knowledge that the check or order would not be honored yet. Now, where did that come from?
The model penal code.
Well, is it appropriate to say in this subsection that not only for purposes of this section, but in any prosecution for theft committed by means of a bad check, and extended beyond the scope of this section?
Well, the directive that I was given was to use the language of the model penal code and change it only for purposes of structuring it to our drafting techniques, so it would be consistent with the way. But as far as the substance, it was my understanding the action of the commission was that. And this was based on the motion of Senator Burns, according to the minutes, that the remaining language of the model penal code be adopted. The second sentence and the subsections in the second sentence says, for the purposes of this section, as well as any prosecution for theft committed by means of a bad check, an issuer is presumed to know check or order, parentheses, other than a post-dated check or order would not be paid. That's from page 35 of your preliminary draft number 2, which is what we were working with in the commission.
Well, it's always possible that Senator Burns could have been wrong.
But all I did with it, I didn't want to change the concept that the model penal code had there, because I felt that I didn't have an alternative under the minutes, the action that was taken by the commission. But I did change it. I did change the language, an issuer is presumed to know, since we have not used that kind of language in any of our drafts, to prima facie evidence, which is language we have used before elsewhere in the code. We've framed these presumptions in terms of prima facie evidence rather than presumed to know.
Right. Well, I think that's preferable.
Yeah. But as far as the language about the check or orders post-dated, I didn't use any parentheses. I think that's bad draft.
I think so, too. As well as any question. Now, if the check or order is post-dated, it's not prima facie evidence. If the drawer had no account with the drawee at the time the check order is drawn or uttered, or payment is refused by the drawee for lack of funds upon presentation within 30 days after the date of utterance, and the drawer fails to make good within 10 days after receiving notice of refusal. Well, I do remember the discussions that we had with respect to this 30-day and 10-day provision. That's sure we all do, and they were not short discussions.
On page 35 of your minutes, after your motion, Senator Burns, it says, Judge Burns asked if the 10-day period imposed any obligation on the taker of the check to redeposit. Chairman Uturi answered that he did not think there was any obligation on the holder to redeposit the check, but if the maker deposited money to cover the check before the 10-day period elapsed, the prima facie case would not exist. Senator Burns took account of the number of members favoring the inclusion of a prima facie provision in the statute, and then noted that the members had made the following policy decisions. One, to structure the draft under the model penal code language, and two, to include the prima facie provision. With these policy decisions in mind, he said he would entertain a motion to send the draft back to the subcommittee to come back out containing the appropriate language. Judge Burns thought there was still a question as to whether the prima facie should come into being upon dishonor or upon dishonor plus 10 days. He thought a vote should be taken on this policy. He said he himself would be reluctant to depart from the policy in the draft, the model penal code approach, since the subcommittee had given the matter much consideration and had recommended the draft. Mr. Knight thought the problem might arise in the proof of the notice of dishonor. Judge Burns moved the retention of the policy of the subcommittee as expressed in Section 11. The motion carried, receiving 9 aye votes and 1 nay vote. That's how we got it back.
So you sent it back for redrafting to incorporate the policy decision, and I guess the only latitude we have here is to pass upon whether or not you structured this with.
Well, you think I said what I should have said under the policy directive from the commission.
Now this, we're talking about the we discussed this, and Frank Knight was all hung up on prima facie business, if I recall, is this right? Had some observations to make, didn't he? Didn't he do some discussion, have some discussion with regard to this?
Well, he had a question about the proving notice of dishonor, and whether or not what kind of proof you'd have to show that not only was the check dishonored, but that defendant was given notice and knew that it had been dishonored in order for the 10-day provision to come into being, you see. That's what was bothering him, I think.
Well, the net practice, I think it's drawn all right. I think that you drafted it properly, and it contains what the commission wanted you to do. We argued about the policy decision of this. I think the net practical effect is probably going to cut down on the number of bad check prosecutions, but that might not be such a bad idea anyway. Does anybody have any questions about how Don has prepared this?
I'm might mention again that when we initially worked on this in the subcommittee, we contemplated at that time that this would be classified as a misdemeanor crime.
Right.
And that the felony check writer, the real paper hanger, would be prosecuted under the felony provisions of theft by dissension.
That's right.
This would be to handle the routine minor infractions involving checks.
Just one. If there is no further discussion, then I think it would be appropriate to entertain a motion to adopt the amendments to the origin sections prepared.
So moved.
Okay, Kurt's motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Oh, no. Motion's carried. And meeting's adjourned. Is that all there is to come with?
All right, unless you wanted to have any further discussion on the forged prescriptions.
Yeah, I would like to.
Oh, all right. I'd kind of reopen the meeting.
I'd like to know what I was supposed to find out from or determine.
Well, I was being facetious when I said subcommittee. I had raised some question both in the subcommittee and in the full commission about the desirability of having a specific statutory provision for crime per se to forge a prescription. We do not have one, do we, Don?
Excuse me?
We do not have a crime for forgery of a prescription, do we?
No, not in here. Now, under the Narcotics and Dangerous Drug Acts, forged prescription for either of those classes of drugs is a crime. There isn't anything in those codes that cover just routine prescriptions for other drugs. And that was the discussion we had with the commission, whether or not there was a policy reason for including that as a setting it out as a separate crime. Now, I think that an argument can be made that even without specifically setting out forgery of prescriptions, now, as New York does, making it a higher degree of the crime, I think an argument can be made that under our definition of a written instrument that presented a forged prescription could amount to forgery in the second degree. If you can get to intent to injure or defraud, if you can say that...
Well, that was the question.
Yeah, whether or not getting a prescription filled with a forged prescription is either injuring or defrauding anybody. You're deceiving someone if you do that, but...
Well, we discussed that when it was... the intent to injure whom? Not defrauding anyone. Well, maybe we should let it be handled in the medical practices or the
but the letter I sent to the Medical Association and to the Pharmaceutical Association pointed out that we were considering a forgery revision in the commission, and that the discussion had come up with respect to making a separate provision to cover forged prescriptions. And I also sent them a copy of the New York penal laws and closure so they could examine and ask them if they had any recommendations or suggestions to advise the commission.
And they must not be very excited about it.
I don't think they are.
You think it's a problem, Justice Sloan?
Frank, I wouldn't have the least idea, really. I assume that with the use of more tranquilizers and V-pill and things like this, there are medicines available that kids might want to get a hold of, or this kind of thing that the medical profession or the pharmacists might want to avoid. But it seems like it'd be up to them to indicate if this is a problem.
Yeah, I would suppose so.
Yeah.
Well, let's recommend back to the full commission that, well, let's not recommend the inclusion of a specific crime for forged prescriptions. And if they come back with very strong reasons and convince us, we can take that into account, and maybe after the tentative drafts are submitted for it.
Well, I'm at a disadvantage because I don't know what law is there is presently or would be included. And as you say, narcotics, dangerous drugs, I assume, is under that too. And
that's two separate statutes. One covers narcotics and one covers
dangerous drugs. That really covers it quite well, I would think, if both of those are included.
And we discussed that in the subcommittee before, and that was the reason we didn't put it in our draft that we sent to the commission, was because of the presence of the two laws now under the narcotics and dangerous drug codes.
Now, let's recommend that we not do it, and can always send that. Okay, if there's no further business,
okay,
we're adjourned. Thank you very much for coming. Everybody. Don, you're getting to be a fox. You're having these meetings on Friday afternoon. I'm all tuckered out.
Why don't you schedule them for 8 o'clock Monday morning?
Well, you can't even find these guys then. There are so many meetings at 8 o'clock Monday morning.
Well, how's your schedule for May, Bruce? Bad as ever, I suppose.
No, I'm not in too bad.